might have to work out a trip. And he, you know, he wants to be in the race flow. So we'll see if Marty telling me to go search for the for the morning lines has got me searching for the morning lines. In addition, you got Witt down inside coming off the Hollywood Derby. We talked about Lady Spite Spear. We'll talk more about her with Sid. You know, Cassie's got, who's the star? And this is a horse that was really kind of obscured by the campaign up in Toronto. It finished the year with three straight wins in the Durham, the Autumn, and the Valedictory. This has got to be the least known, you know, streaking five-year-old in the country, in North America. Mark put him on the grass starting in June and absolutely took off. That was, you know, he also, those were synthetic surfaces, but his turf performances were excellent, including winning the Niagara. Started him into a mile and a quarter allowance that he won, and that really kind of changed his fortunes. Toneless gelding, so he'll be around. Decorated Invader shows up in here out of the Fort Lauderdale, where he was at 22-1, second to City Man. Good old Ivar for Apollo Lobo, right? Masterpiece. A Tone, got to mention A Tone, right, for the Wyckoffs and Mike Major. Allowance win at Aqueduct in November, and then got a little 60-day freshening. The Fillion Mare Turf, Dalika. Speaking of stalls by the name of Al, that Shot to Sara shows up. The Queen Elizabeth winner from 21, who had a very abbreviated just two starts last year. The Jenny Wiley and the Fall Harvest. But has had a nice string of works at Payson. And as a five-year-old, getting going. The Hooper, good old Fred Hooper. The McKnight. We talked about the Previant a little bit, the inside information, and more. There's your Pegasus Day. Let's take a break. Sid joins us next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them, is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standard bred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Race day, but a little quiet this morning. Saw some horses out on the racetrack, and usually you see a number of horsemen kind of wander through here. The horseman's lounge can be a terrific little crossroads. Horsemen come in the breezeway sometimes to the paddock, or vice versa, and into hour two, and Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale, and that means Sid Fernando joins us. Good morning.
Good morning.
Gonna have you here. We're all convening in South Florida.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to coming down. It's gonna be fun.
Well, and tomorrow the Eclipse Awards up at the Breakers, and we were going to have at least one Eclipse winner. Tom Law was going to join us, but Tom is now he's begged off till tomorrow, so we'll get him the morning of the awards, and then of course next week when we got some of the recapping of the weekend, we'll get around to many of the winners. Sid, I did reference for everybody that you were coming as to represent Chuck Fipke, and looking forward to joining you on that front. I was explaining the Lady Spite Spear decision, because it came. Somebody asked me off air. They said, why would Mr. Fipke want to run her against the males? Explain the thinking with Lady Spite Spear heading off to her second career.
Well, that's basically it. She's going to be bred to Gunrunner this year. And, Mr. Fipke would like to... she's run against fillies, and he wanted to run in a grade one race for her. I think she fits. And, it kind of just opened up for her because the colt who might have gone in here was Cheryl Spite, but he's going to Japan, and so you know, Mr. 50 preferred to run this filly here instead.
Well, and yeah, haven't done the serious handicapping work yet, but at a glance, yeah, based on that effort at the Breeders' Cup, why wouldn't she be a fit here?
Yeah, and especially, you know, this the Colonel Liam dropped out. It's pretty
wide open race. That's true.
It's a pretty wide open race, and you know, she's already a Grade One winner, and you know, he wasn't really interested in running in a Grade Three race.
Makes it clear, and Luis Saez rides back coming out of the Breeders' Cup.
Yeah,
he may.
Yeah. He rode a really good race on her there too.
Yeah. Any other? I haven't dug deep. Are there any undercard spots for 50 runners?
No, I think that's it.
That's the only one.
You know, yeah, Roger's got her, and he'll, you know, you'll be with me at the table, so we'll go to the paddock and meet Roger too.
Well, and actually, I think he's Atfield. I did see Atfield's got other runners. He's got Sweet Enough going in the filly and mare turf race for Trevor Harris. This is a recent allowance winner, and he's also on the card early. He's got a horse in the third, which is, I think, just an allowance, right? Let me see here. Yeah, he's got something going in here. This is a mile and 3/8. Ready for the? Oh, no, you are. You do have another Fipke runner. Ready for the lady.
Oh, I forgot. Ready for the lady.
Ready for the lady. A colt that is by. You know, here it is again. For those that one person in particular who doesn't understand Chuck's approach to naming horses, a more than ready out of Perfect Lady, hence Ready for the Lady. And it makes it easy for Chuck to keep track of his progeny that he has produced.
Yeah, I did want to point out one thing. This family, the Lady Spite Spear, Cheryl Spite, and Ready for the Lady, it's all the same female line.
Wow.
Going back to Noel Higgins, Lady Cheryl. So it's all the same family.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
it is amazing. Well, that's what you know. That's what a long-term investment and long-term commitment, essentially, to you know, to a breeding program. That's what it. You know, that's the central folk. That's the whole key. You got to have the wherewithal and, you know, prune and. You carefully mix and match, and at some point, ideally, you've got a steady stream of stake horses, and Fipke's done it. It's and the funny thing about it too, Sid, is that you're never entirely satisfied. You're always having to, you know, to keep watching and tweaking and being, you know, cognizant of the changes in the bloodstock trade, essentially, and you know, some of the, you know, the ways in which the breed is morphing or changing.
Right. And the other thing with Mr. 50 is, you know, he when he breeds a horse, frequently he's breeding, you know, if it's hoping for a filly, he's actually trying to breed a potential broodmare down the road that he can breed to one of his stallions or a stallion that he likes. So he's very unusual that way. Of course, you know, all he does is raise homebred, so you know he's not a commercial guy. And you know, that's kind of the focus of his program. So, like, Ready for the Ladies Dam is Perfect Lady, who's a half sister to Lady Spitespear, actually. Because both of them are out of Lady Shakespeare. And if you see how he constructed her pedigree, it's Lady Shakespeare, of course, was bred to Spitestown and got Lady Spitespear. But then Lady Shakespeare was also bred to his own homebred stallion, Perfect Soul, and got Perfect Lady. And that's the dam of Ready for the Lady. So you see how, you know, he looks down the road like that at creating potential broodmares for his stallions.
It, you know, it's funny. I was looking earlier at TDN and reading some of the recap of the sale. We'll talk about the sale in a second. And I happened to notice there was an ad for Title Ready.
That's right.
And Title Ready, just because he's a More Than Ready, that sort of just popped in my head. But
he's from another family that Mr. Fipke's developed, and that's the Personal Ensign family.
Right.
So he's got, you know, Seeking the Soul from that family, Title Ready right there. So, yeah, that's it's common More Than Ready sire, but that family is yet another one he's developed.
Well, and Seeking the, it's funny because the first foal out of the family, out of Title Seeker, who was the daughter of Personal Ensign, was Seeking the Title, who got Seeking the Soul.
Yeah, that's right. And he bred Seeking the Tiger.
You know, by all rights, Sid, Title Ready should be well received, no?
Well, it's, you know, it's a super tough market. You know, he got announced to stud late. And he's in that fee range where, you know, it's pretty tough. But I'll tell you, Steve, people should pay attention to his horses because, you know, he retired a B jersey for $5,000. And then the COVID year, he allowed breeders to breed for free, no stud fee. And this horse is doing incredibly well. He's got, from his first 20 starters, he's got 3 stakes horses, 2 stakes winners, and 2 exceedingly promising maiden winners. One is Topsy for Steve Asmussen. The other is Sherald's B, who's in Dubai, who's going to go next to the UAE 2000 Guineas. So, yeah, there's a lot of this pedigree and form kind of translates, and sometimes it's, you know, it's good to take advantage of a breeder who decides to, you know, back his own stallion.
Well, you know, the fact that, you know, More Than Ready sons, Sid, are you know, now going to be in demand with him, you know, with him unavailable. And I would imagine, yeah, the time is now, right, to get out in front of it.
Yeah, I would say, you know, one of his long-distance sons, Fantastic, it just had a stakes winner from his first crop, the one at Turfway Park the other day. That's More Than Ready, you know, stallion.
Well, every time you look, it's amazing how often when you look at these, and it's very much like Mr. Fipke, the way in which he bred Title Seeker in particular went to Perfect Soul 3 years in a row. Then Lemon Drop Kid, then Blame, then More Than Ready, got Title Ready. But even before he knew what Title Ready was going to be, he kept going back to More Than Ready for the rest of her career as a broodmare. Didn't get the same kind of result necessarily. One that never made the races. The one right after Title Ready, then she was barren. She started to have trouble late in her broodmare career. And then there's Ready Seeker. Is she still on the racetrack?
I can't recall off the top of my head.
Yeah, she might.
I think she might be a broodmare right now.
Now, all right. So, because she's five. So... One prominent More Than Ready daughter will to follow, and then of course, as we just kind of featured here a little bit, Title Seeker, Title Ready, excuse me, out of Title Seeker. All right, well, and I referenced you earlier, and thanks to Joe McKay, talked about I referenced Proxy. We were doing some handicapping of the Pegasus with Dick Powell, and
yeah, I heard that. Yeah.
Well, and I didn't remember. I knew somebody had a preference for Proxy, and it was you, Joe said. So 9-2, you're going to get at least a start.
I do like Proxy in that race. I mean, I like him. His last start was excellent. He finally got that grade one race, but I agree with, I think Dick made some good points about Defunded, too. I mean, there's only one way that horse is going to go, and it's going to go to the front, But it's such a great race to handicap, isn't it?
Yes, and different than this race has been. A lot of times it's been sort of a coda, to a big star career, and it may turn out that way. I mean, if Cyberknife can negotiate that 10 hole and win, it'll be a coda for him. But this feels like the most sort of straightforward, just good group of older horses mixing it up,
Yeah, and as you mentioned, it's Cyberknife's last race, and it's got to be Art Collector's last race too, because he's going to start at Claiborne.
That's right, and we haven't given him nearly as much attention. And it's funny, he hasn't, as often, given Mott's, of course, Mott got him from Tom Drury when Bruce Lunsford moved him over, but it is interesting. This will be his first time over the racetrack, and of course, preparing for this up at Payson Park with the Mott string, and Cyberknife's making his first start over the racetrack as well. Then there's the locals between Sappy Joseph and Antonio Sano. With Simplification and White Abario, and also what we should mention with Safi with Skippy Longstocking too. I mean, you got some players in here that may at a first glance be a cut beneath on the handicap front on the handicap horse landscape, but they've got extensive success records over this this seemingly at times quirky racetrack.
Good point.
So it's going to be fun. Got it. Speaking, by the way, of Cyberknife, let's talk about Al Gold for a second again. And here's Al making a early push already to get back to the Derby. Last year, the only frustration on the Cyberknife front last year was the Derby experience, where he got too involved in the pace. But Instant Coffee. Let's talk about Instant Coffee a little bit, Sid, and get your thoughts on his page.
First, I thought his race was pretty impressive over there. Closing, that's a tough track to close on. He is obviously from the first crop of Bolt D'Oro, who's done incredibly well, and he's out of a Uncle Mo mare. So the Uncle Mo daughters are just kind of going to stud. You know, we're in the early days of that. And so it's a real nice boost to Uncle Mo. And, you know, he ran like a horse that, you know, distance is going to be his friend, too. I mean, his third dam is by Empire Maker. And, you know, that third dam was a black type, whatever. She's a half sister to Lady Apple, who won the Fantasy. So it's a nice pedigree, and it's pretty notable that Al Gold, you know, back to back, is able to come up with triple crown contenders. It's not easy to do. Yeah. And usually that's kind of reserved for these big syndicates now.
Well, let's absolutely give credit to Joe Hardoon, John Hardoon's son, and it's Hardoon that's out there, you know, working the catalogs and you know, doing the legwork. Chad Summers also involved in the selection process for Al, but Joe Hardoon is building himself a hell of a reputation with Al.
Very successful.
Well, and there's also, we probably should spend a minute after we get done with this, we should mention that Slip Mahoney that we talked about with Andy, the maiden winner with an 87 buyer from the weekend as well on Saturday. Al won three races on Saturday, two in New York in an hour and 20 minutes, and an instant coffee. One thing,
Uncle Mo that won over the weekend wasn't his, was it? Scooby. You're talking about Slip Mahoney. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I got confused with the Uncle Mo maiden winner, Scooby Quando. First time out, he won that stake at Turfway on his debut.
Yes. Yeah. I mentioned.
But Slip Mahoney was the Arrogate that won.
Yes.
For Al.
We'll come back to him, and we'll glance at that page too.
Joe Hardoon bought them both.
He's buying all. Yeah, he's doing all the work.
Yeah.
He's doing all the work for Al.
Well, he's done a great job.
Sid, you mentioned The Mayor, Follow No One by Uncle Mo. The Empire Maker that you're referring to is Miss Red Delicious out of My Merry Apples, who's a clever trick mare. And then the Holy Bull Mare, Sacred Sue, starts this all off on the bottom line. Instant Coffee is a complete outcross.
Huh.
Complete, a five-generation outcross, which...
That's kind of rare these days,
exactly. I mean, if he's going to start to pile up a resume, this will be a very interesting and you would think, you know, desirable prospect for somebody, you know, down the road. I'm not trying to, you know, but this pedigree, there's some things to be very intrigued by. I mean, I just because I can't. Of all the three-year-olds we talk about in recent years, there's less than five that we've discussed that were out full outcrosses like this.
And one of them happens to be his own sire, Bolt D'Oro.
There you go. There you go. Well, what would, you know, on that topic, because, of course, look at this. Fantastic! We got John Parada swinging through. Unbelievable! I threw that out as a suggestion.
Yeah, it's, hey John.
He's going to sit down in a second here. Bolt D'Oro went to the Medaglia D'Oro, of course, went to Globetrot, the AP Indy, and she herself out of the Lord of War mare, Trip, and 49er mare Tour going back. The mating of Bolt D'Oro to the Uncle Mo, what's happening? And John can even, we're talking about Instant Coffee, who won the Southwest on Saturday for Al Gold.
Right.
And with the fact that Boltoro's a full Outcross, five generation, and now here's this son of Boltoro, a five generation Outcross.
I remember Boltoro at he was at Santa Anita that year that I was there with Hammerly and the crew, and what a gorgeous horse he was. I mean, he still stands out to me, and that was the Justify year, who, you know, took all the attention. But I remember what a fantastic individual he was. I was looking forward to seeing him go to stud, and I'm not surprised to see, you know, an Outcross is, as Sid has referred many times, you know, it's the way to breed.
And tough horses are usually associated with these Outcrosses too.
Mm-hmm.
And this horse looks pretty tough. I mean, just from, you know, having watched him, he's always got a kind of a 1970s type of running style to him. He's going to be an interesting horse to watch. As John also said, it's one interesting thing about the Boltoro and Justify is that they went down to the wire. You know, Justify obviously got the best of him on the track. Then they've had that litigation from the Boltoro side, but then on the at stud, their first year, they went down to the wire, and then Boltoro, finished ahead of them.
And they wouldn't have gotten the same type of mares either. I mean, the same level.
Very
I mean,
different.
You're talking
exactly.
About
good
apples
point.
And oranges.
That's
there,
a good point.
Too, really?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, one was 25, and the other was 150 or whatever.
Right, I mean, a lot of those. Yeah. I mean, it happens. The deputy minister, I keep, you know, because I always go back to him, but he started out at 25. And,
yeah.
You know, looked a little not that great the first season, and then all of a sudden, boom. So, you know, it's, as they say, only one out of every 10 at every level in the Stallions, right, makes it.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
Since I've got both of you here and the unique opportunity to let you both kind of sound off against each other, explain to the lay public the benefits and what the goals are when it comes to the decision making process, the kind of mare, you know, and from the mare owner standpoint, because that's who's listening, that, you know, that is in the process, you know, right now. It's January, you got another 4 weeks to, you know, or more, obviously, depending on when your mare's ready to be covered again, or for the first time.
It depends on what that mare owner wants to do, because we just talked about Mr. 50, for example, who only races everything he breeds. That's a really throwback model. We could count on one hand how many people do that. Most people are breeding to sell, Steve. And so because of this breeding to sell, it's one of the reasons why, you know, first crop sires are so popular. And I assume Sagamore, who bred this colt, Instant Coffee, he was a $200,000 Keeneland September yearling. So he was, you know, off a $25,000 stud fee. That's a great result for a commercial breeder, as it was in this particular case.
Well, and if you don't mind bouncing off each other, it the benefits of what, you know, what kind of a mare, you reach for somebody like an Outcross that might click a switch versus a sire that is more inbred and is going to have, you know, multiple inbreeding.
Well, I'll make a point.
Elements.
I'll make a point right away, though, Steve, that when you talk about owners picking stallions, it's really not a good idea most of the time, because most owners, and I've referred to this in my book, the Thoroughbred Investor's Bible, there's a tendency to overbreed, most because, what do they say, nothing enhances an opinion like ownership. And people said, oh, I got the greatest mare in the world. You know? Well, she didn't, yeah, she didn't break her maiden, but she would have broken her maiden, and she would have won the Oaks if not, blah, 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 blah. So, you know, going in that vein, that really, that mare should be breeding to a $5,000 or $10,000 or $15,000 stallion, and they want to breed her to a $50,000 stallion. Now, that's fine for the stud farm because they're in the business of selling breedings. But it's, in the long run, it doesn't really do anybody any good because the person who, the owner who insists on breeding to that and doesn't listen to their advisor, which is another chapter in the book where I tell you, you have to have a good advisor, like a Sid or a Eddie Rosen or, you know, somebody who knows the pedigrees. And
it's so funny you say that because you don't know how many times I've told owners you're overbreeding the mare. I mean, it's like clockwork. It's so true, John.
Yeah, that's why I devoted a whole section to it in the book.
You know, somebody claimed the mare. You know, I'll give you an example. You know, for $25,000, and then they come to us and they say, you know, I want to breed a mare in the $50,000 to $75,000 range right away, because you know they're thinking results from that stallion are going to pay for all that, but it's not. You overbreed, you're going to get really killed commercially, like John said.
Right.
Even if you're just doing it for the commercial sense, you're going to get killed commercially because that stallion's got so many yearlings at stud, and this guy's one, which is a weak mare, is the one that's going to get penalized.
Right.
When he gets in the ring. You know, so it's very true.
And although most people, you give them the choice, you say, well, what's the purpose of breeding? Are you breeding to race? Are you breeding to sell? Well, they go, oh, well, I'm breeding to race, but I might want to sell. Oh, my stallion, a Derby winner, I should sell this. You know, I should sell this foal now. Well, wait a minute, you didn't breed. You're going to breed to race. That's why I let you overbreed, because you were going to keep it and not, you know. So it's one of those...
It's very true, and the thing is, I always tell clients, you're better off being in the top of that stallion's book with your mare rather than at the bottom end. So, say you've got one of the weakest pedigrees to justify, that's not going to do you any good. But if you've got one of the strips, you know, say at 100-150 feet, but the same mare, if you've got, you know, breed him to Bolt Oro, for example, at 25 when he was 25, say, and now you've got one of the strongest mares for that stud fee, you're going to do much better pound for pound.
Right.
If you're going to sell commercially. And again, you know, everything you said, John, is like almost clockwork with what we deal with weekly.
Right. It's everything. Mm-hmm. And nonetheless, most of the time they won't listen anyway. So,
Most of the time, it's so amazing how we'll do it. We have like bigger clients, and then we have guys, you know, that come in and are kind of a la carte. But it's so funny because we had this client, you know, he sent three mares the other year, and we gave him, you know, our recommendations. And then he came back again this year. We're looking at the mare, and he didn't use any of the stallions, we said.
Right. And you give him three more this year, and he'll ignore them, too. So, well, you know, the one thing about owning horses and breeding horses is the best way to learn how to do it is to get beat up year after year after year, and then you finally go, oh, gee, you know, I should have paid attention in the first place. But it's the taking your licks or paying your dues. Some people just... figure that they know what they're doing in their business. You know, they know they're smart guys.
Yeah, no,
you know, I can figure this out.
Subject, by the way, but I just saw your tweet that you're moving to Ireland. So congrats on that.
Yes, thank you.
And then I saw you post a photo of a filly that your hopes are riding on. So best of luck with that too.
Yeah. I hope I have a leg of that filly. She's a Churchill. And a lovely family and. We have hopes for her. So we gave her, you know, we didn't start her at two. She was a little immature, and she's in training now. She just started cantering a couple weeks ago, and she'll be ready in the spring.
Well, the move to Ireland's going to be exciting for you, huh?
Yes, it is. I've been going there since the 80s. My mother's side of the family was Irish, so I have Irish citizenship since I took it out in the 90s. The intention of eventually someday going there. And I have,
where in Ireland are you going?
We're going to be living in a town called Athlone, which is basically the dead center of the country. It's west of Dublin and east of Galway. And,
nice.
It's on a lake. It's on the train line. It's about 40 minutes on the train to the Curragh. So perfect.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always good to do something like that, and it's always a great adventure. I mean, I left New York for the first time and moved to Tampa, so you know, I know what you mean. I know that feeling of actually going to another place, and it's fun.
Well, I've been in a lot of places, but Ireland has always been one of my favorites. I was around when they were laying out Coolmore. That's how long ago it was, in the early 80s.
Right.
And due process, we bought a share in Sadler's Wells when he was syndicated. We bought Be My Guest and El Gran Señor. We had shares in all those horses. And I watched the place grow and grow and become the most phenomenal breeding establishment in the world, bar none. You know, nobody can even argue that. And I have tons of friends there, and it's just been a great experience. I think that Kentucky and Ireland, I mean, the two best places in the world to breed horses. That's where the best ones come from. So, not hard to figure when the grass is green 12 months a year. So that's
a big help. That limestone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
The commonality, right?
Well, I was to say, because when I first came back from there, and they said, "Well, they're into horses there." I said, "They're into horses." On the quarter here, we have George Washington's face over a quarter over there, which was a 20 pence coin that had a horse. So I would walk into when I first got there, I'd go into the bank to get some change, some money, and I'd walk up and I'd put some American money down. They go, "Oh, you know, I heard Vincent O'Brien has one running today." They like unsolicited in the bank, they would tell you. So.
Yeah, that's great. They speak about racing everywhere you go over there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, let's try to go. Champions Weekend, I can't recommend any more highly. Steve has promised me that he and Tina will show up for one of these times. Champions Weekend is a two-day meet that they have, usually the second weekend in September, and it's brings together all the best of the Irish horses in all categories, and they run it at the two premier tracks, which are Leopardstown in Dublin and the Curragh, which is about 45 minutes outside of Dublin. It's more of a country track. And those are two experiences which are definitely worth putting on your bucket list.
Yeah, I made my first trip to Ireland in 2018. My wife and I just said, let's just go this next weekend. And it was specifically just to go to Coolmore.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was my first trip to Coolmore, first trip to Ireland, and I wanted to see Galileo. Mm-hmm. You know, who was getting on in age, and that was a fabulous trip.
It's a phenomenal place, and when you go to Coolmore and look at the stallions, they keep pulling them out. And you keep going, don't they have any crooked ones?
this
is a confirmation lesson. It's like they're all perfect. Well, guess what? There's a reason why they're there. They've gone through. Somebody said to me, "Well, why would I breed to a Coolmore style? I think that's always overpriced." And I said, "Wait a minute. It's been a champion, and it was purchased for $1 million in the first place because its confirmation was perfect." So, you know, like. It takes a lot of the guesswork out of it when you can, you know, somebody's already done the screening for you. But
they're incredible.
They're waiting for the next big one to come. I don't know who it's going to be, but they have a lot of nice stallions right now.
Let me get Sid a quick survey of the Southwest horses. And the big, that's this week's 3-year-old
conversation going into the weekend. And Bolt Doro represented here by Corona Bolt for Brad Cox. This is the Stone Street Colt that won the Sugar Bowl, is 2-for-2, but is stretching out from the 6 furlongs to a mile and a 16th. You've got Cox with a hatful, obviously, and he's the, you know, he's the story, it seems, even more so than Baffert, based on what went on this past weekend when it came to the future wager. But Cox has also got Jace's Road coming off the Gunrunner win at Fairgrounds, and he's got Hit Show for your client, Gary and Mary West, a homebred out of that Nice Actress. The Candy Ride Colt that most recently won an allowance at Oak Lawn. And give us a quick survey. Baffert is here with Arabian Knight, who was so impressive on the Friday undercard at Keeneland and Breeders' Cup.
Well, I'll be rooting. We have two clients in that race, and that's Alba
with Jason's
Road.
Yep.
And Gary and Mary West with Hit Show, which we actually did that mating. I just have to go with those two. I can't, I'm biased, obviously. I can't see through those two, but I'll tell you one thing about this Arabian Knight. Baffert had told me from the beginning that he thought he had the best Uncle Mo out there. But I think this colt, he's super fast, and I think he's one of the few horses I think that Baffert really has to kind of treat with kid gloves to keep him together. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how he does. But, you know, there's some form line there with Jace's Road and Arabian Knight, because in that big win on Breeders' Cup weekend, one of the horses behind, 7.5 lengths behind Arabian Knight, I think it was Determinedly, I think.
Yep, it was.
Came back, and Jace's Road beat him like by, you know, 5.5 in the Gunrunner. So, you know, as far as form lines go, whatever that's worth, you know, it could end up being a horse race.
Well, and you, Determinedly, for those that know that, you know, your ears perked up, of course, that was the Cassie Wire winner on Saturday at Fairgrounds in that allowance race.
Right.
That was changed considerably by Banishings getting cast in the stall. So that will be one to watch going forward. And, you know, if you like those common company lines, Determinedly, you know, 80, I think it was, I've got it here actually somewhere, 84 buyer winning that allowance race. Hit Show, you know, the damn actress, I know she won the Comely, certainly stretched out or, you know, came back after the try at Churchill and was strong, took a big step forward, and seems like a horse that's really developing on time. Asmussen and the Winchell Factory, they've got Red Root 1 coming out of the Kentucky Jockey Club, where Instant Coffee, if you want to go by, you know, company lines, Instant Coffee winning next out, of course, on Saturday. So there's also McPeak, who had a huge day at Oak Lawn in December, and brings back Sun Thunder, one of his five winners from the early part of the meet. This is an Into Mischief, bred by Southern Equine, and a $400,000 part. It's interesting. I do see that Cypress Creek bought in. So they sold the horse and then bought back in Sun Thunder. It could be interesting. It's a Mischief colt.
Yeah. So, you know, they'll shake them out in that race and see what's what.
You know, D. Wayne, who just keeps running, I mean, just keeps sending them out there. That Western Ghent is...
is kind of an in and out type, and certainly at 60-1 ran a credible Smarty Jones behind Victory Formation. So a little and also participated in the Churchill Fall Meet Stakes as well, that produced two fills and instant coffee that were 1-2 on Saturday. This is a nice, it's a fun group. McPeak's also got Frosted Departure, a Frosted that won the Renaissance at Oaklawn and stretches back out. The first couple of tries going two turns did not go all that well back in the fall, but McPeak's going to take another shot at it.
And horses, you know, they jump up and improve at this time of year too. So
exactly,
you know, you just don't know what's going to. You know, there's that factor too. I think the big story that I've really seen with all this stuff is just how loaded Brad Cox is.
Yeah,
you know? I mean he's his colt buying groups and different clients. You know, they've got him. You know, several deep in every race now.
Well, and you're going to see that when the nominations close this weekend for the Triple Crown, the early nomination, $600. We talked about this the other day. Certainly, if you got a three-year-old of any import or any potential for $600, it's well worth it because the next round will be $6,000.
It's interesting, though. It's interesting that it's still $600. To nominate. It's been that for, what, 25 years? I don't know. No, it's literally.
Yeah, I know.
I remember 20 something years ago nominating horses for $600. How come, you know?
That's true.
It's never gone up a nickel.
That's funny, actually.
It's funny, you would think.
Well, why, and on that topic.
I don't even know when it went to 600, but it's like.
Why do we not have, and this is just a completely out of left field question for the two of you. Why do we not have as many futurity funding races and concepts on the thoroughbred side as they do on other competitive breeds, and the most notably quarter horses?
That's it.
You know, it's they used to do that. You know, it used to be a feature of a lot of the 2-year-old races.
I can tell you why they don't do it. It's because
they're
hard to administrate. They're hard to, you know, you have to do constant, you know, the next payment and the next,
right.
You know, so it's, and they would rather just have you put up your nomination and run, you know, rather than keeping track of it. I mean, they're really complex exercises, if you want to call it that, to get a horse from. It's most of the time they're nominated. They can even be nominated in utero. They can be nominated as foals. They can be nominated. It used to be, futurities used to be, they had one in, we tried it in New Jersey back in the 80s.
It used
90s,
to be that yeah. There was a series of nominations.
Right,
series. You had to keep making payments, right.
Every 4 months or whatever, right. There was another fee.
And people would miss a payment and then they'd be out and, you know.
Yeah,
it was.
Yeah.
So they're a little bit.
They're a handful.
You know, they're a handful and you have to have somebody to administrate them and somebody to do that. And but if you're looking at it from the tracks viewpoint, what do you get? What do you get for it? Do you get any more of an attraction? No, you've got the Haskell. It's nobody has to make multiple nominations. There used to be, you know, used to be a number of them, but they've gone away.
Yeah, the one in New York that I always look at and I say to myself, why are there not more of this? You make the one payment early, you know, right when you register your foal in New York. For the lady fingers, the lady finger and the aspirant. And the purses invariably are between 110 and 125,000 in the fall at Finger Lakes. And it's a rich, I mean, it's a, and you only, I think it's only, I think you only pay $100 even, or.
Yeah, but they need it there, Steve. They needed it, Finger Lakes, to get the big purse, because otherwise, who's going to put up $500,000 for a purse at Finger Lakes? No. But in New York, yeah, 500,000, 200,000, it's a race.
It's just one of those. And you know, when you see the quarter horse program that is so ingrained and so central to you know, to their biggest features.
Quarter horse and it's harness.
And harness,
harness
too.
Did it a
yes.
lot. Yeah.
Yes. Well, in the Sire series, we've talked things. All right. Well, I just unique to have the two of you together. And in fact, the two we may get the two of you together on Friday for dinner.
Yeah, that'd be nice. That'd
yeah. Be nice. Yeah, I'm definitely down for that.
All right. Well, Sid, we will see you on Friday, either way, and Saturday. But Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill & Dale, Work Thoroughbred Consultants, of course. And the time is now. Get in line and get lined up with Sid and Roger at work to get your mares, get them compatibility analysis done.
And listen to them.
And exactly, and follow their advice.
Right.
Don't say. Like I've done with our mares, and in fact, we're on. Well, it'll be a while yet, but poor Combatant. We're gonna have. We are gonna have a baby by Combatant, and he's dead. So it's kind of an odd. It's really an odd scenario, Sid, and sad about his passing in South America. But
yeah, those cat daddies are turning into really good sires. So,
exactly.
You know, yeah.
What do they say?
You got a good shot.
What do they say? The best way for a stallion to succeed is either the stallion dies or he gets sent to
exported
Japan.
Or Korea. Or Korea too.
Yeah.
Or Turkey.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, watch. You got that race day, right? You got who's the race day? That
White Abario.
White Abario, right? Mm-hmm. Watch. You'll win the Pegasus. Yep. You'll have to go to Korea to chase down race day. Well, Siaka's got all the good race days. He's got those brothers, Lobster and Chowder.
Lobster and Chowder.
Yeah, and him and Eddie and Eddie F. They had the two race days.
So does Bob Lothenbeck, one of our clients. He's got Charlie's Penny and
that's right.
And another one, the sister, I forget. But yeah, he's got two too. One of them's earned close to $500,000.
And we just talked, I'm losing track of days, I guess. Did we talk to Pessin yesterday? Yeah, Pessin yesterday about, and he's got some of those.
A couple of really nice homebreds for Bob won over the weekend. One of them, the Warfront Philly Catan, is now 2-4, but then he won with that first-time Union Reds.
How about that?
Philly, yeah, coming from way back and ran him down. So Bob's got a lot of promising horses coming up, and he promised me that, he said, if we ever get on the Kentucky Derby trail and get to the Derby, he said, I'm not only flying you there, but your entire office.
Fine.
I said, that's nine people. He said, they're all coming.
Nice.
But he's got his own plane, though, so he doesn't have to pay
for it. He'll send the plane. I love it. Sid Fernando, everybody. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus. Sid, thank you.
All right. See you, guys. See you, John.
See you.
See you, Steve.
See you on Friday. We're coming to you from Gulfstream, just the top of hour three. In fact, we're 10 minutes in, and delighted that John, that was a throwaway line. I said, if you're out and about this morning and you wanted
I
to come over.
Take a chance on missing you.
Outstanding. We'll talk about this in a second. Let me do this. Casey, let's take the break, and we'll come back. We'll talk to John, and Seth Merrow is ahead as well. We'll do some handicapping with Seth before we wrap up on this Wednesday, first day at Gulfstream for the next, really for almost the next 2 weeks, because we'll stay through Holy Bull next Saturday, and then we'll do some recapping of Holy Bull, a couple more days on the back end, and then off to Tampa for a couple of days, since we can't go to Tampa Bay Derby. I'm not going to just up and miss Tampa entirely in 2023.
We got to go.
When was the last time you were in Tampa? Ages ago?
Ages ago.
You
might have had a different name.
Sunshine Park? What was it called? Sunshine Park, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that what it was? That the?
I'm trying to think. It was
Sunshine Park, I think.
Sunshine Downs.
Yeah. I think so. We could talk about the one-time racetracks that are now deceased. Great racetracks from the past. John Parada is here. Unbelievable. Back after this, live at Gulfstream.